Was anyone in the online session in Adobe Connect some weeks back about a similar topic? And you were? So you've heard some of this before, and this topic of exploiting the wow factor actually came out of something I wrote almost absent-mindedly in my blog earlier this year, and I was just a little tired of hearing people say, you know, you mustn't let the technology lead. Because after years of hearing that statement, I realized what people were really saying when they said that was, don't let the technology do anything, just let's not use technology. It was a little bit of a barrier and a justification for not using it, not in all cases, but then I reflected on my own experience and realized that the times in my life where the most amazing things have happened with technology are times when I had no idea where I was going or what it was doing, and I just tried it and amazing things happened. So I think there are times when you do throw the politically correct view out the window and let the technology lead. Alex Hayes in his session this morning said there are three stages coming to terms with technology and education. And the first stage is excitement. So it's that stage that I'm talking about. In 1997, I wandered into this place called The Palace. It was like an incredibly basic Second Life. It was a 2D world rather than a 3D world. But a friend and I, who were teaching online, English online at the time, said, let's take a look. And when we took our students in, they just loved it. It was the perfect environment for 1997 for learning language. So that was my first instance of realizing you can use technology that wasn't designed for education. And that was the point Jane Hart made this morning. We're using technology that was not designed for education, which has become critical to our role as educators. Andrew Dauch is a Year 12 biology teacher in rural Victoria. Many of you may have seen him. He was here last year at this same event talking about what he's done. And he made this simple decision to podcast the little bit of his classes. He just made 10-minute recordings on something to do with biology, put it up on iTunes. And what happened to him and his teaching and his class just changed forever. He had no idea what it was going to do. This global community formed. His students started to be connected to other people around the world. He used to start teaching differently in the classroom simply because he let the technology lead. There's a course that some of you may have done, many of you may have heard about it, called the 23 Things. I just flagged the course. The focus of this course is the technology. It is, of course, implicit that we're looking at technology that we may or may not use, but this course simply puts the technology first. People sign up for this in great numbers because we actually like, if given the opportunity, to just get in and play without having any pressure about how am I going to use this with my students. And I repeat, often the conclusion is going to be, I won't use this with my students, but now I know what it is. Middle of last year, this book came along, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. So when we think about technology and the ever-present exponential rate of change, I just think it's important to stop and think what's going on. We heard information this morning about how maybe it changed the way that young people think. Well, after reading this book, I've been no doubt it's changing the way we all think. And it's just, when you look into it, it's a no-brainer. So the internet is changing us. Question is how. So let's look at technology in the light of a couple of theories, or three theories, in fact. The first one there is technological determinism, which says that technology is an external agent that changes us. So the internet is changing us, changing the way we think, according to the title of that book. In the second theory, the social construction of technology, it says that technology evolves out of the prevailing milieu of the time. It's almost as like, so when television came along in the 50s, it's like we were ready for television. We wanted a mass broadcast tool that we'd all sit around and watch so that we no longer had to sit together and eat, and so we made it. And in the 1990s or the 2000s, we as a species had reached the point we were sick of mass broadcasting. We wanted a tool of our own that we can all communicate with each other on a far less hierarchical basis. So we created it. And then, after we create it, it starts to work on us. The third ground, or the third theory, is the middle ground called social shaping. A woman called Nancy Baim refers to technologies having logics. Nicholas Carr, in the book just mentioned, says that technologies have ethics. and says that these ethics are messages that a tool or medium transmits into the minds and culture of its users. And I think the middle ground is probably the one that we're looking at here, but Marshall McLuhan made this famous statement way back, probably in the 70s. We shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us. So whether or not technology is an external agent or whether we actually create the technology that we're ready for is a good question, but what I'm sure of is that it changes us. I like to have this kind of as a part of the context too, and I often use this quote because, I mean, it explains why I'm still here and doing this stuff. It's not just because I love learning and education. I just love technology that works because it's like magic. As Arthur Clarke, the guy who wrote 2001 A Space Odyssey, said, good technology is indistinguishable from magic, and that's why it's a hook. Who was in Shelley Gibbs' session a little while ago? Okay, so Shelley had a QR code up on the screen. I road tested this before coming up here, and it typically won't work on a screen, on a projected screen, because it's too big. It will, however, if you want to try the codes that are on the table, that should work, because I've tested these. One of them will bring up a back channel, just a simple tool that we can use for today's meeting, which looks like this. So we saw Twitter in use this morning that we could all see. Now, this is a much simpler version. This is just called todaysmeet.com. I've set up a little chat room here called eLearning 11. You can go to this URL. You can just click there in the message box. It'll probably ask you what your name is, and anything you say will appear in here. So we'll come back here in a while. So if you have some questions or comments, and just maybe think about this as a tool that you could use. It's dead simple. It can stay there for a week or a month. It's free, and it's a way of having people interact with you and the content without having to put their hand up, which of course you can do too. The other QR code on that piece of paper on the table will take you to the slides in SlideShare. So magic tools, and like I said, some of these are old. You know, there's no big deal about some of these, but I just want to make the point that just because the world's moving at a rapid rate and there are all these new technologies, this is not a reason to ditch what we already use that works really well. In South Australia, we use Centra. In New South Wales, you use Adobe Connect. There are lots of these other virtual classroom tools, but I'm just going to use it as an example. Every time I come out of a Centra or Adobe Connect session when it works, and you've been connected with people all over the country, perhaps all over the world, you've shared talk with each other, you've been writing to each other, you've looked at slides, you've looked at websites, you've had this incredibly rich experience, and you're sitting at your desk, and every time I turn it off, I just sit there and think, that was magic. How on earth did that happen? I'm connected to people all over the world, and it's just, it's astounding. Aggregation tools like RSS. Now, RSS is that technology which brings content automatically into a website or onto your phone or into iTunes. It's an old technology now, and it's been affected by the hashtag, which we'll come to in a minute. But RSS is that technology which does this kind of thing. These are just screenshots of three RSS feeds coming into a Moodle site. So RSS can be like this. They can be just little kind of summary headings that's taken from another website, in this case from hospitality.net. And as new stories break on hospitality.net, if you set up an RSS feed to come into your Moodle or LMS, then it just comes in. So your site is dynamic. It changes several times a day. Every time you go in there, there are new stories. And if you click that, it takes you off to the link. The second one there in the middle is using an RSS feed out of Flickr. This is from a course on sustainability. So the moment anyone posts an image in Flickr and tags it sustainability, it comes into this badge, an RSS feed badge, which is embedded in your site. On the right, Tapersay have a podcasting tool, and that audio is coming in automatically. So you can set up multiple RSS feeds. So the content is dynamic, and once it's set up, it just runs itself, and you never have to think about it again. The RSS feeds is an old technology, but I think it's magic. It just appears like magic. The hashtag you were told, we were all told, what the hashtag was for today. And if we go into, if we're using Twitter or posting photos on Flickr, if we search that hashtag, all that content turns up. And just because I'd never done this before, and it was, anyway, I was watching the cricket on the weekend and it said on Channel 9, now follow us at hashtag Cricket9. So opened up Twitter on my iPad, did it, and there it is, the conversation just rolling forward via hashtag Cricket9. So if you know what the hashtag is, you can just join into a conversation anywhere around the planet. So this is an aggregator, that hashtag with a phrase like Cricket9 aggregates all the content on a tool and brings it into one place. This is magic. Anyone done it with Q&A? It's very funny. I mean, it's entertaining and it's incredibly funny because you have the real-time program and within 7 seconds, someone has responded to, usually it's a politician, making some comment that's kind of not full of great intellectual substance, and people are very funny. And on Twitter, you can just enjoy the commentary almost in real-time via the hashtag Q&A. Wordle. I mean, I just want to remind people that it's there. It's been around for a long time. It might be new to you, but Wordle.net is this fantastic place. Take a bunch of text, put it into Wordle, tell it to create a cloud, and that's what it does. And this one's about visual data analysis, so you can see at a glance. It's about learning ways, analysis, variables, tools, relationships, and just try it sometime. Any bunch of text, paragraph, even a long extended piece of text, Wordle will make a visual cloud. This makes a nice banner in a learning management system or on a PowerPoint slide or a topic for a new heading. The squiggle. Uh-huh. Didn't know that.
I learned that last time.
But, you know, it's magic. It's just magic. We've looked at QR codes. So another one that you can try, which is QRpedia. Yeah, go to QRpedia, go to Wikipedia, find the URL, paste it at QRpedia, and it will generate the QR tag. And this QR tag takes you to the Wikipedia article about Adelaide. So start thinking about, these things are amazing for triggering files. And as Shelley said in the previous session, I've just got these triggering websites. They can trigger audio. If I've set this to play a piece of music, it can. If I set it to play a video, a YouTube video, it can. So rather than, you know, writing out resources, just put a page with a whole bunch of stuff on it, QR code, hand it out, send it to people, put it on the screen, and just a shorthand cut for a lot of resources. Yep. Yeah. We'll see an example in a minute of a Moodle course that's got QR tags all over it. So if you're not into reading and writing, you can actually click the media, you click the QR tag and it takes you off to a media version or scan at the QR tag. I don't think we're going to look at Twitter trends. I just want to go on to one of my old favourites. Flickr's been around for 100 years. This site you might like to check out sometime. It's full of fantastic ideas. Flickr is the primary. There are others, but it is the primary image repository site on the internet. And it's very much hooked into social networking. So just some of the things you can do in Flickr, apart from just sticking photographs there. Look at this annotation tool. You can't see it here because it's a slide. This comes from a course in art history. And if I was looking at this live on Flickr, if I put my mouse there, it would be describing what you see there. It would be describing what you see there. It's describing. So this becomes an incredibly rich resource, not just of image, but of annotation. There's text annotations here of where all of these things fit in terms of art history or this type of painting at the time. And a practical example, well, not a practical one, that choose your own adventure thing that we used to do with books years ago when you'd reached, you know, a part in the book and it would say, do you want to go to page 43 or page 76? Do you want the good guy to win? Do you want the bad guy to win? Do you want to get married? Do you want them not to get married? And you can create that same kind of choose your adventure thing. This is an Ock health and safety example, where if I click on that image, it will take me to another image where I'll be presented with another range of options. Should I do this or go there? So you can use a series of photographs linked in Flickr via this notes tool. POV glasses were in use here in the previous session, but I'll just see if we can play this video. The audio is not going to be great, but hopefully at least we'll get to see it. And if you've seen it before, well, doesn't matter really, but I had planned to play a number of videos, but it will depend entirely on how quickly or not, and this is not looking real fast. But let's see. So you can see it, this is a cleaning and oil based paintbrush.
I've often asked my kids how to clean up an oil based brush properly with oil based paint. First of all, you get the brush, wipe all remaining traces.
Now that's all we really need to see, and people who've used POV and people who were here in the previous session had first-hand experience just a little while ago, but do you notice anything different about this video? Yes? Yep, by the teacher, in fact, the lecturer after the session. When I first saw this video, it actually came from Alex Hayes, and I wrote to Alex and said, how did you film this? Were you standing on a chair next to the lecturer? Were you holding the camera up here? How did you do this? Were you standing right alongside the lecturer? In fact, what the lecturer is doing is wearing glasses, which are a camera, point of view glasses. So that's the point of point of view. And that's still a very cool technology. And cheap. And, you know, but people are so creative. And this is a story from Monday in a hospitality exam at Adelaide in a TAFE college. A student was wearing point of view glasses, and only because later in the same exam the supervising lecturer noticed that student wasn't wearing them anymore, he is. And just decided to investigate. What they were doing was taking turns at filming the exam, because they staggered the exam throughout the whole week, and several of their friends have been come today. So I thought, good on them, but they got sprung. This is an example. We won't play the video, but here's where they're used in with a practical application. This student actually uses POV technology. He's in remote Australia. He uses that technology to film what he's doing and sends it back to the teacher or assessor. We'll skip that. I just want to briefly, I mean, the app world is a world on its own. And so it's kind of a token nod to a few things that are available on iPhones and iPads. Let's just see. Anyone use SoundHound? It will depend on the connection here too, whether or not this works. Now it's thinking, and it tells me that's the lion sleeps tonight. That's magic. I think it's on iPhone as well as iPad, and yeah.
Holding it up in a shop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Magic. So it's going back to a central database somewhere and analysing the sound. And My Tracks is one that if you're out walking and you want to know how far you walk, how fast you're walking, your average speed, My Tracks, just switch it on, walk, and it will give you all the data you need. It's great. Google Goggles, And this is where I don't think iPhone has Google goggles, but the Androids do. Now, if I had this book here called A Faster Future, I could just go with Google goggles, click, and it will take me to the Google search page for that book. If I'm in a shop, there's a product, not sure about that, click Google goggles, there's the Google search. Flight radar is you want to watch planes going overhead, and if you know, want to know where that flight's going, it will tell you it's Singapore Airlines going from Singapore to Sydney or vice versa, etc., etc. So that's just a token nod at apps, and I'm sure you all have hundreds collectively that you already use. Pardon?
I had a zombie one.
A zombie one?
I had a zombie app and
Some people may have come up the last couple of years. I've done a little kind of summary of what's on the horizon, and in terms of the Horizon Report is this report about technology and education that is released every year. And what it does is look at technologies of the future and estimate whether or not they're going to have significant impact on education in the 1 year or less time frame, or the 2 to 3 years, or 4 to 5 years time frame. So the ones with the arrows we're going to have a quick look at. But let's just see if anyone has... Nobody there? Projector. That's not working properly. Well, let's go back to the site live. Refresh. There it is. Well, that's it. So that's it, that one comment. So no questions there. But as you can see, that is that you? Just you? Just you has said good, fantastic networking knowledge shared. Thank you. We were here. And if you're like me, you'll be looking at a slide like that and thinking, what the hell is semantic applications? What is telepresence? And I mean, the fact that the further you go out with these, like the 4 to 5 year time frame, it's fairly routine that when you look at these reports, that's your first question. What on earth is that? But this project, the New Media Consortium's Horizon Reports, have been going for about 8 years now, and they've had very few misses. So they gather approximately a group of 30 people who are from various sectors who take a look at the horizon and think this is when what we think will be mainstream within these timeframes. Sometimes the time frames are wrong, but they usually are correct about the technology. So when we're looking at what's here, I don't think there's any debate about if, it's when. These are coming. And what do you do about this? Well, you can either ignore it, you can have fun with it, or you can just dabble in it, have a look at it, and know that 5 years from now that you'll be ahead of the pack when it does become, and the phrase is, mainstream. We won't spend much time on mobiles. Let's just look at this forklift driving course. You can check this later if you want to look in more detail. This is a Moodle course about forklift driving, so it's got a very direct TAFE or VET application. And what I'm hoping will appear, that's actually a QR code, which is not showing. So where these gaps are all QR codes. So this is that trigger media files related to the same content. So people who learn or work in locations where they need to drive forklifts, often their reading and writing is not their strong suit. So the point of these little tags is it kicks them off and it gives them an audio or a video file of the same content. Sorry, we can't see those. This actually clicks off to an app that runs on your phone about how to drive a forklift. So, it's just an example of how one small move forward in getting your content into mobile devices, and we heard the message this morning, it's just going to be more and more and more. So the more we have our stuff adapted for access via mobile devices, the more relevant we're going to be. Again, ebooks is not something that we need to struggle with conceptually. I think we all know what they are. And there's just a couple of interesting projects going on. Project Gutenberg hopes to put every single known printed resource in e-format. That's its project or its goal. This is an interesting one from the University of Adelaide. They are working to provide 26,000 copies. Or have they already got? So it's not there, but somewhere else I read that. They're aiming to 226, yeah, that's of all the classic works of literature. So behind the scenes, whatever we're doing in education, it's just happening. It's just a given. E-books are here, and you don't have to ride a plane very often these days to see the guy sitting next to me yesterday was reading his e-book. Augmented reality keeps coming back in these reports. It was there last year, just a couple of new examples. And how this works, and again, it's the phone. If you wander around Berlin now, and if you stand at a place where the Berlin Wall used to be, all you need to do is hold your phone up, and it'll superimpose the wall, in the case in front of the Brandenburg Tower, which is exactly where the wall was. So wherever the wall was in Berlin, you can just, there it was. Now that's a really simple but very effective example of augmented reality. This ad's actually been on TV. It's a Mazda ad. And this is kind of combining different technologies. So he's using an app, holding it over the magazine or the printed version of the ad. And it's a bit like QR codes. It triggers an audio file.
Welcome to Australia's first print ads. Well, more than just a print ad. The all-new Mazda VT50 has arrived. The technology.
So, using an app on your phone, holding it over over that, just triggers an audio file, or in this case, a video. That's another kind of augmented reality. And this stuff is happening. It's very much here. Another example of that one also on mainstream media, you may have seen this one. This is combining point of view technology and augmented reality. This is from BMW. And it takes them through the whole process. And this one has been on TV as a BMW ad. And this is a combination of point of view technology and augmented reality. And when you get that combination of two technologies converging, the force, if you like, the power and the impact is double and triple. Another quote that I like to throw in when we're talking about technology. Most of these things that we look at here may seem to be off in the realms of the far future, but they're already happening. They're alive and well in labs. It's just that you don't see it all over the place yet. Was anyone in the session last year, the High Horizon Report session that I gave here last year? All right, let's play with this. I mean, this is where it gets a little bit scary, but again, this is not if, this is when. So what this is a guy who is in his bathroom, changing his work profile. So from his, okay, that's the and that's where, if you're like me, you scratch your head and wonder where we're heading and why we're heading, and then there's education and learning somewhere in there. And again, it's not a question of if. Anyone ever been to a nightclub? There's one apparently in Los Angeles, one in Berlin, where if you don't have a chip, you don't get in. There are two nightclubs, at least in the world, where you have to have a human implant chip in your wrist or you don't get in. So just that point on convergence. So we had the mobile phone for years, that was no, and then when the internet and the mobile phone merged into the smartphone, we had a lift off. You get this incredible change in technologies, or when they converge. We won't look at that. Well, that actually, you can look at that in your own time. That's a really kind of more sophisticated version of what we saw with the Mazda ad. It's someone reading a textbook and they put on point of view technology and click something and a 3D image leaps out. They click something else and a video plays. So it's that convergence of augmented reality and point of view to create incredibly amazing, yeah, resources. Now, game-based learning was mentioned this morning. It's been lurking there for a while. Again, it's this, you'd say, well, some people are doing it, but it's again, mainstream. When are we going to look at game-based learning and consider it mainstream? Game-based learning doesn't have to be incredibly sophisticated, as the games that most people play, serious gamers, what they're using is World of Warcraft and the like, which are incredibly sophisticated bits of software, which don't typically run inside a normal TAFE network because they're too demanding. How long do we have? 10? Okay. I'll leave this one for you to look at what this is. It's high, not high tech at all, but you can go in there and you can take on the role of an industry rep, a politician, a normal citizen, make decisions about how you're going to run your life or your company and see what the impact is on terms in terms of sustainability and climate change, and then it gives you a graph of how the world turned out according to your policies. In this one, you can take on the role of being a country, for example, Asia, and if you're Asia, you get rice, rubber, steel, and you try and trade with Europe, who's got cheese, fish, and shoes, everything's got dollar values or monetary values, and you trade depending on global economic conditions and see how you go, and you realize how difficult it is to make money in the international trading environment. This one's not so much as a game, but fun. It's, you go in, it's a really engaging thing. You actually get to cut the skin and pull the flesh apart. And yes, it's excellent. Gesture-based computing. We've got it in our homes already, those who've got Wiis or Xboxes or Kinect, where you can, you know, play tennis or go bowling and the various things that those games allow you to do. This will be how we go shopping. Will it work? It won't work. This is in a different format. It's actually Flash. Well, no, it's not. It should work. There's one other that's... What it is you can see that this woman, she's in a clothes shop, and she's standing before some kind of scanner, clothes are available, and she can just pick that green top there and just do that, and then it puts it on her. And she said, no, I want blue, please. No, I'd rather the neck wasn't so deep. And you can dress yourself in front of this thing until you've got the thing that you want, then you go and buy it. So this, again, this will be a lot of fun, and it's not if, it's when. Within a few years, this is what we'll be doing. This one is it's a human body on a table. It's like it's a table just like this, but the surface is totally wired, so I can roll that skeleton around, I can separate that sinew, I can take something out and look at it, put it back in. Amazing. Magic. Let's just have a look at one more before we have some questions. See if this one goes. Visual data analysis was not in the last two. The way that the Horizon report works is that it creates a list of four, which is whittled down to two, and this is not going to do it for us. This computer's too old. Maybe not. Now it's coming. And I'm not making these full screen because I don't trust the connection. Sometimes if they make them full screen so you can see better down the back, they just slow right down or stop. So What this is a map of its visual data analysis, and it's about life expectancy in this case. So I'll just click play here to get it rolling, and then stop it here. That says 1970. These big dots here correspond with a particular country. This one here? India. Average life expectancy in 1970 was 49 years. If I click play, you can see that big ball of India is still moving to the right. If I stop it there, India's life expectancy in 1990 has increased to 58.4. This big one here is China. China goes from way back here to right over there. So this way of representing information, I mean, clearly for education, this is stunning. This is, someone just has to gather the data and input it and run the algorithms, however they do it. But this is visual data analysis, and there's lots of fantastic examples on the web of this stuff in action. A not so good one if you're in Christchurch, even still, Christchurch are getting 20 tremors a day, and this visual data analysis tool maps it. One more example. I forgot about this one. This is learning analytics, and again, relevance to education, absolutely clear. What this does is take the points in the course that you have so far. So if you're using a learning management system and you've been graded, you've done assignments which have been assessed, so that's already in the system. It looks at the amount of time you take to do your assessment or assignment tasks. It adds that information together with what you've done in the past, in previous courses, previous subjects. All of that is factored in and put into, this is from Purdue University in the US, and they call it course signals. So when the lecturer runs course signals on the course, the next time you log in, you get a red light, a green light, or a yellow light, and you can guess what they mean. So, and it's based on your performance in the past and to that point in the course, and the lecturer might run it every month. So if you've got a yellow light, you better hope you've got a green one by the following month. But it's taking all that stuff, which is in a learning management system, plus other data, assembling it all, and making a best guess of whether or not you're going to pass or fail. And this is called learning analytics. This is a really simple example. This has been around for a while, but this is from University of Wollongong, and this is Blackboard. Here's the discussion threads. This is a visual diagram of the connections that people make in the discussion forum. This person here has only made one post, and it wasn't in response to anybody else. These people have replied to each other. So this person here has made lots of, so they can see at a glance who the person is who's actually responding to people or who's getting a lot of the traffic through a discussion forum. So you factor that in with that kind of stuff, and you start to get this very rich and accurate pattern of people's performance. So this is another argument. You can see monitors, auditors wanting this stuff, so everything will be just totally tracked. And it won't just be a tracking mechanism. It will be a very useful mechanism for teaching staff and for students to see how they're going. The commercial world's getting into this too, and here they're measuring things like, have you viewed that report? Did you change it? Have you viewed that video yet? So you can add all the data you want and factor these into your learning analytics. So, that's plus five or so for talk, or 1 minute plus? Well, let me stop there for a minute and just see if people would like to comment or ask questions. Making your own games? Look, I have no idea. I'm sorry. You provide the raw data, like the scenario and what you want the variables to be, but someone who's got skills with developing that kind of software, well, they're probably just web-based or even Flash, but I don't know. But I'd hop onto Twitter and say, yeah, has anyone got any skills or any ideas about how I can make this stuff, or do a Google search? But no, I don't make this stuff myself, so I really have no idea, but that's what I would do. I don't know why we stop doing all the good stuff when people reach 13. Because we like it too.
Okay, another question?
Well, they will be, as we keep saying, with everything on the website. But if you have a QR code scanner on your phone, you can scan the code that's on the tables there, and that will show you. Slide share. Right. But it should, on my, when you use the QR code?
No.
You just dub those words on. And it came up. Yeah, sometimes it's a little bit scary. So Google has made it, has noted that I've done that and that and joined it all together.
More questions of pedagogical nature.
Ha.
I mean, how are we put in the position of knowing which of these tools are the best for things that we're teaching? Is anyone aware of some guidance or literature or anything about, you know, the fit for certain purposes?
Well, I think the list that Jane showed us this morning is as good as there is. I mean, there are lots of those, you know, the top 10 apps for education, you know, the top 10 technologies for education in 2011. As the year gets closer to the end, they will proliferate like a plague. But Jane's is a good one, the one that she showed this morning.
All right, well, if there are no more questions, thank you, Michael, very much.
Thank you. Thank you.